This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, September 21, 2005. From KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Monica Lopez. As gasoline prices continue to hover around the $3 mark, we'll hear from Democrats proposing legislation to stop price gouging.
Some people have to work 2 hours a day just to cover the gasoline that they had to use to go to work if they're making the minimum wage.
Also on Capitol Hill, the debate is on over how to manage reconstruction costs for areas ravaged by Hurricane Katrina. And finally, we'll go to Las Chiapas, a small Mexican border town where over 30 homes have been bulldozed, lawmakers say, to prevent border crossings.
We don't like to destroy. We like to build, you know, not to destroy, you know. But I don't like when they destroy schools or houses.
Those stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Leanne Caldwell with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Hurricane Rita has become a Category 4 hurricane as it inches toward the Mexico, Texas, or Louisiana coasts. Evacuation efforts are underway in Galveston, Houston, and those left in New Orleans. But as Renee Feltz reports from KPFT in Houston, some people may not be able to leave.
The entire island of Galveston is in the heaviest surge inundation zone, and this afternoon it's under mandatory evacuation. 50 miles north in Houston, residents in flood-prone and low-lying areas have been urged to evacuate. City and state officials emphasize they're focusing first on special needs residents in hospitals and nursing homes. Residents without transportation to leave can get on city buses, but Houston Mayor Bill White stressed not relying on the government.
There will not be enough government vehicles to go and evacuate everybody.
Survivors of Hurricane Katrina are still in the city's smaller shelters and face some familiar challenges. This woman hasn't received FEMA assistance she says she was promised.
If Hurricane Rita comes, we're going to be struggling in water again. How am I supposed to just jump up and leave with no money?
The city's homeless say they're not clear on where to go, though they want to leave.
Well, no real details on it, but what it did in Louisiana, I wanted to be a part of it here.
From KPFT in Houston, I'm Renee Feltz.
Protests in an Indian northwestern province by indigenous people, or tribals as they are locally known, are heading toward a major showdown against the Indian government. Binu Alex reports.
Some 20,000 tribals are now blocking the main roads, demanding an end to their discrimination from the mainstream and a separate tribal homeland. The police firing on the rampaging Rajbangshi tribes have already killed 5 and more than 100 injured. The police claim 3 of them are their officers killed by the mobs. The shootout has now worsened the situation as the state government has sent more troops to Kuch Bihar, the remotely located area in West Bengal province ruled for the last 24 years by a communist government. These tribals were ruled by their king before the areas merged with the Indian Republic decades ago. While in the western Indian state of Gujarat, another protest was held by another tribal group, this time protesting transfer of their legitimate land rights forcibly to landlords. Since the tribals have inhabited the areas for centuries without land records, they have no documents to prove their ownership. From Ahmedabad in India, I'm Binu Alex for Free Speech Radio News.
The largest armed group in Nigeria's Niger Delta region has threatened to sabotage oil installations following the arrest of its leader. Sam Alakoya reports from Lagos.
The police say they are holding Mujahid Dokubo Asari, leader of the Niger Delta People's Volunteer Force, in connection with seditious statements he made in an interview he granted a news magazine. The Niger Delta People's Volunteer Force is an armed group which wants local communities in the Niger Delta to control the oil wealth in the region. The billions of dollars Nigeria makes yearly from oil taken from the Niger Delta is mainly shared between the Nigerian government and Western oil companies. Many in the Niger Delta see Dokubo Asari as a man who has come to liberate them from the oppression of the Nigerian government and Western oil companies. Dokubo Asari's supporters are threatening to attack oil installations in the Niger Delta if it's not released. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Two Thai Marines have been killed by Muslims in southern Thailand. Officials say the deaths are in retaliation for the killings of two Muslim residents killed Tuesday night at a local tea shop in the southernmost province. The region has been plagued by nearly daily violence for the last 21 months. Hundreds of people have been killed there, and the Thai government says Muslim separatists are behind the killings. From Bangkok, Duali Sikautau reports.
Tension is high in Thailand's Muslim-dominated province of Narathiwat, where young Muslim men have killed two Thai Marines. Authorities say the bodies of the officers have been taken to a local hospital for examination. Eyewitnesses told reporters that a group of Muslim men had charged into a house where the Marines had been held hostage since Tuesday evening. Thai police say local Muslims suspected the officers were involved in a deadly gun battle between unidentified men and local Muslim residents. The Marines were later found severely beaten with multiple stab wounds. The bodies were found in a house in a remote village bordering Malaysia. Men in that area had asked Thai officials to send Malaysian journalists to cover the crisis, claiming they didn't trust the Thai media to accurately report on the situation. When the requested journalists finally arrived, they came too late. Local news reports confirmed that the Marines had already been killed. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Duahli Saikautau in Bangkok.
I'm Leanne Caldwell, WPFW in Washington, D.C.
As drivers continue to suffer high prices at the gas pump, House Democratic leaders are proposing legislation to stop price gouging. At the same time, analysts this morning testified at a Senate hearing that while some kind of state response is advisable, the oil companies, they say, do not control prices. Anastasia Nezditskaya reports from Capitol Hill, where lawmakers, including California Representative Nancy Pelosi, talked about the rising cost of oil.
It's of high priority to America's working families. Some people have to work 2 hours a day just to cover the gasoline that they had to use to go to work if they're making the minimum wage. It's part of the middle class squeeze that is hurting America, and that was all before Katrina.
This introduction by California Representative Nancy Pelosi reflects the opinion of the Democratic caucus that what stands behind the high oil prices is speculation by the oil companies. This led the caucus to develop a bill announced by representative from Michigan, Bert Stupak.
The FREE Act, or the Federal Response to Energy Emergencies Bill, empowers the president to declare a national energy emergency. Also in our legislation, the Federal Trade Commission must, for the first time, promulgate a rule on price gouging. We grant the FTC the authority to investigate price gouging, not only to big oil companies, but all the way down to the local gas station. We also provide the FTC with the power to establish price gouging penalties. And these penalties will be triple the profits, and there's also criminal sanctions that go with it. And last but not least, we want the state's attorney generals to be an active partner with us. Underneath our federal legislation, they can go into any U.S. district court and enforce this price gouging.
In a hearing held today by the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science and Transportation, Robin West, chairman of the board, PFC Energy Team, testified that price gouging is not an accurate description of what oil companies are doing.
Speculators can't keep driving markets up and up. The market is just too big and too liquid. The picture I would paint of the market is one of three critical factors. The first factor is the fundamentals of demand and supply. The second factor contains real risk factors like the terror premium, like hurricanes, like weather and climate. The third factor is the factor containing those speculators that you're asking about. What's happening today is that we've got a fundamental tight supply and demand situation compounded by these natural risks that we've just seen recently.
Senator Barbara Boxer from California challenged this account.
When you say poor oil companies, that's kind of what I get from you, that they don't set the price. Untrue in my state. They set the price because they control everything. And in addition, they love it. They don't want more capacity.
Senator Boxer cited her conflict with the Shell company when Shell decided to close down the Bakersfield refinery in California. Among the measures proposed by the energy experts were to increase investment in research and development, to promote the use of biodiesel fuel, to expand the refinery capacity, to reduce demand for oil, and to wait till the markets correct themselves. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Anastasia Gnezditska in Washington, D.C.
As the damage caused by Hurricane Katrina is revealed, assessed, and reassessed, the debate over how to rebuild the Gulf Coast is taking center stage in Washington. Congress is considering proposals from both Democrats and Republicans outlining how the government will manage reconstruction funds. Some on Capitol Hill are demanding the formation of an independent commission to investigate possible cases of fraud. Other congressional members are asking for budget cuts to pay for the rebuilding efforts. From Capitol Hill, Selena Masuda reports on two of these proposals.
For the second time, congressional members issued a call for an independent commission on Hurricane Katrina relief efforts. California Representatives Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, and Henry Waxman, ranking minority leader of the Government Reform Committee, introduced legislation on Tuesday calling for an independent anti-fraud commission to ensure honesty in Hurricane Katrina reconstruction contracts in the Gulf Coast region. Waxman says that waste, fraud, and abuse have plagued Iraqi reconstruction contracts and that the practice should not repeat itself.
It would ban monopoly contracts, like the contracts that Halliburton has received in Iraq. It would prohibit hiring contractors with conflicts of interest to conduct oversight. Contractors who enter government service would be prohibited from giving contracts to those for whom they worked in the last 5 years. And the gaping loophole in the current law, such as the provision that allows contractors to give lucrative lobbying contracts to procurement officials.
Halliburton, which is one of the companies that received contracts to handle hurricane relief efforts, has been found by Pentagon auditors to have billed the U.S. government in close to $2 billion of questionable and unsupported Iraq reconstruction costs. The proposed commission, which would be modeled after the 9/11 commission, would probe allegations of price gouging or profiteering in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Pelosi cited the recent arrest of Federal Procurement Administrator David Safavian as a motive for holding the Bush administration more accountable. Safavian, who was in charge of designating money for Hurricane Katrina relief, could have connections through family and career that could be a conflict of interest if there is no independent Hurricane Katrina Relief Commission, says Pelosi.
His wife is the chief counsel for the committee Government Reform the chair of which will take over the investigation of Katrina. I think the links are too close to inspire any sense of confidence, and I'd like to know how Mr. Safavian got his job in the first place, and did his friends in Congress have any role in that?
On Capitol Hill, House Republicans from the Republican Study Committee called for cuts in the federal budget in order to offset the cost of Hurricane Katrina. Many of the proposed cuts, ranging from eliminating subsidized loans to graduate students to eliminating the Corporation for Public Broadcasting budget, have been proposed for several years. Arizona Republican Representative Jeff Flakes believes that the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will put pressure on not only Democrats, but Republican leaders to make several budgetary cuts, including a delay on the Medicare prescription drug program, which Flakes is proposing.
The way it's structured and everything else, and like I said, if you put it up to repeal it, I'm not sure that they would support it because they think that we'd be punished in the next elections for not having a benefit. I don't think so. I think we'll be punished because the benefit is too generous for us to afford.
Selena Masuda, FSRN in Washington, D.C.
In Delray Beach, Florida, tensions between police and African-American communities have been growing all year, sparked by the killing of 16-year-old Jared Miller. Now police are calling on a Black County commissioner to resign, and community members say they are struggling to organize so that they don't have to live in a fear of being shot. From WMNF Radio in Tampa, Andrew Stelzer has the story.
Race relations are it's pathetic. They pay a lot of lip service. I'm surprised that there really hasn't been any type of race riots. It's that bad.
Josh Smith is one of 32 African-American community leaders who came together this past April to form a community task force in the wake of the police killing of 16-year-old Gerard Miller. Officer Darren Cogoni, in his first month on the job, shot Miller in the back of the head. The officer claims Miller has been driving erratically outside a school dance. When Miller was asked for ID and didn't supply any, the officer stepped back. Witnesses say it appeared Cogoni was reaching for his gun. Miller then sped away and down a breezeway.
If, in fact, there were no individuals in the breezeway in front of the car which it has been confirmed, then what was the justification for the officer's perception that he fired on the basis of believing that the lives of someone was in jeopardy?
The incident sparked community outrage, so much so that a public inquest was televised throughout Palm Beach County on the government TV station. A judge found probable cause that the officer should be tried for manslaughter, but 4 months later, in August, a grand jury decided not to take the case to court. In reaction to that decision, County Commissioner Addie Green criticized the state attorney and the justice system.
We can no longer stand here now and expect the system to take care of us.
That's right.
Or law enforcement to be fair.
That's right.
I'm no longer going to ask my young black men to be passive. I can no longer ask my young black man, when you see a law enforcement coming towards you, run or put your head down or put your hand in your pocket. No. Like Pastor Bruce told me, tell him to go where there's the biggest crowd of people he can find. Because if he doesn't, he will be killed.
Local police took offense to Green's comments, which they took to mean that she was calling for black people to disobey police and run from them. When Commissioner Green held a press conference a few days later to clarify her remarks, 60 members of the Palm Beach County Police Benevolent Association showed up wearing T-shirts that read, "Addie Green must resign."
Our issues aren't about race or whatever, and she's making this into a race. Ours are that she's telling people to violate the law.
Sheriff Sergeant John Kazajan is the executive vice president of the Palm Beach PBA.
You know, it's always been a battle between police and citizens in general because, hey, we enforce the law. The majority of the people love us. However, we got some people there that don't like us, and they'll preach hate all the time they can against the police.
West Palm Beach State Representative Priscilla Taylor has tried to bring Commissioner Green and the PBA together to talk, but those plans were postponed twice and eventually failed.
Young African-American men are probably more apt to get stopped than others. So I think what she was trying to say to them was to be careful, but it just came out a different way.
Black community leaders are calling for a citizens review board of the police and marched over the weekend to protest the proposal of a new board with no power to implement any policy changes. 50 members of the PBA recently held their own rally outside the county government center, still calling for Commissioner Green to resign. Shahid Freeman, vice president of the South County chapter of the NAACP, compared the officers wearing the T-shirts to the Klan, but Kazajan feels the opposite is true.
His name was Rashid Friedman. See, that guy just preaches hate. He was in there yelling during her press conference that we kill black children. For him to say that, that was just off the wall.
Do you think there's any validity, I mean, even larger than the county there, to folks who say law enforcement in general does have a track record of being more heavy-handed, committing more violence against non-white people, black people?
No, I disagree with that. You know, if you were going to do a statistics or whatever, I haven't seen them. I doubt that.
Officer Cogoni has been let go by the department, but the Miller family is still pursuing a civil suit against the police. State Representative Taylor says the most important thing may be having the talk that many black parents have with their children before they become teenagers, warning them about how to deal with police. For FSRN, I'm Andrew Stelzer.
Thousands rallied in the Philippines today to demand the resignation of President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo over allegations of election fraud. The protests were timed to coincide with the declaration of martial law in 1972 by late dictator Ferdinand Marcos. While President Arroyo has vowed never to declare martial law again, victims of some of the country's darkest years don't believe they'll get justice under her administration. Gurley Linao in Manila files this report.
13 years after winning a class action suit against late dictator Ferdinand Marcos in the United States, thousands of victims of human rights violations under the strongman's regime have yet to fully taste victory. While the court awarded them more than $2 billion in damages, the victims have not seen a single centavo of the reward. For years, the Philippine government even blocked their claims to at least $634 million in Marcos's secret bank deposits that were eventually transferred to the national coffers. Last year, current President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo vowed to set aside one-third of the recovered Marcos money for compensation to the victims. But the funds are slowly being spent by the government on questionable expenses, and the victims are worried that the recovered ill-gotten wealth is once again being stolen. Marie Enriquez, Secretary General of the Human Rights Watchdog Karapatan, is at the helm of the campaign for compensation of victims like herself.
The victims were very mad, and they said that, well, if this is the way that the Arroyo government is squandering, you know, ill-gotten money that has already been recovered, no, and now is being stolen again. So they are very mad. We're just asking 1/3 of the amount. And now, by the way, they're squandering the money in two years' time. No money will have been left. No.
Enriquez lamented that the victims do not expect to get real justice under the current administration, alleging that Arroyo herself has become the number one human rights violator in the country.
It is very hard to expect, no, an administration, a government such as Arroyo's, no, to render justice to the victims of human rights violations while she herself is the number one human rights violator now. No? In 4.5 years, no, of her administration, we have recorded or documented 4,207 cases of human rights violations already. Under her watch, 413, no, individual victims have been documented to be victims of political killings.
Father Armin Luistro, convener of a coalition demanding Arroyo's resignation, said the anniversary of the declaration of martial law should be a reminder to all on the need to fight for truth in the current crisis. He accused Arroyo of employing the same dirty tactics that Marcos used to perpetrate himself in power.
The darkness that descended on the country 33 years ago is actually descending on us even now, no? And that's exactly the message that we're sending, that Gloria must go, and because otherwise then that darkness that has descended on us will continue to be a cloud over the nation.
Despite the continuing struggle for justice, Enriquez said the victims are optimistic that their hardships would not be in vain.
So long as we are able to encourage the public, you know, to remember, you know, to remember the fight that the generation of Filipinos snuffed out by martial law, I think that is victory in itself. You know. It has been shown that no matter how big the military's hand, you know, is imposed on the will of the people, eventually the people will oust a dictatorship, a tyrannical government that imposes its will on the populace.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gurly Linao in Manila.
2,000 people from around Mexico traveled to La Garrucha over the weekend in the heart of Zapatista territory to participate in the first plenary session on the Other campaign, initiated by Zapatistas last month. Held as a popular assembly or town hall, the plenary brought to a close a series of 6 meetings that the rebels have held with distinct sectors of Mexican civil society. Subcomandante Marcos revealed the plan that he, under the guise of Compañero Cero, would tour throughout Mexico for 6 months to test the waters for the Other campaign, departing Zapatista territory in January of 2006. Tim Russo reports from La Garrucha.
The work for the vanguard to explore the terrain for the Other campaign has been assigned to the Compañero Subcomandante Insurgente Marcos. He will be the first to leave, and after him we too will go, taking turns to do the work.
Lieutenant Colonel Moises spoke emotionally during the opening ceremony of the first Zapatista plenary on the Other campaign, telling a story that revealed Subcomandante Marcos as Compañero Cero, the Zapatista delegate that will embark on a 6-month tour of Mexico to consolidate an anti-capitalist neo-left. Subcomandante Marcos explained the rebel plan.
Compañeros y compañeras, el plan. La delegación Zapatista empezará.
The Zapatista delegation will begin where it began 12 years ago. What we are going to do, together, is to shake this country from below, raise it up, turn it on its head, and we're going to put it back together once again, anew, between the Pacific and the Atlantic, and between the Rio Grande and the Suchiate. And then it will indeed have to start working.
The Zapatista rebel leadership and Subcomandante Marcos facilitated and chaired the plenary, offering brief summaries of proposals presented during the discussions. Participants agreed by consensus that 5 minutes would be granted to every speaker for each of 6 topics that were discussed on how to commence the Other campaign. The assembly decided that no political parties could participate and that there would be no one spokesperson for the other campaign. The assembly also agreed that indigenous, women's, gay and lesbian organizations, among others, should continue organizing as they have been while creating a space where emphasis can be placed on their diversities.
La Sexta y la otra campaña.
The Sexta and the other campaign no longer belong just to the EZLN, but to everyone who embraces them.
For Free Speech Radio News, this is Tim Russo in La Garrucha, Mexico.
Residents of a U.S.-Mexico border town may again encounter the sound of bulldozers raising homes. At the behest of New Mexico's Governor Bill Richardson, the Mexican government yesterday gave the green light to demolish the small rural town known as Las Chepas in the Mexican state of Chihuahua. Richardson had asked the governor of the Mexican state to bulldoze the town because it serves as a staging area for border crossers. The town sits across the border from New Mexico and has been a topic of hot debate in the last couple of months. Meanwhile, the people of Las Chepas have opposed Richardson's call to demolish their town. Correspondent Dolores Embernal has more from the U.S.-Mexico border.
The 100 residents of Las Chepas in Chihuahua, Mexico, woke up to the sounds of bulldozers and a posse of 15 Chihuahuan police officers on Tuesday morning. They had come to bulldoze over 30 abandoned adobe homes.
I mean, it would be nice to make a trade, you know. We destroy this town, and what about the Americans destroy a town on the other side, you know? That would be fair, you know.
Humberto Gonzalez came to Las Chepas a few weeks ago. He is a Mexican artist who believes that there is a lot of forgotten history in this rural town, named after Mexican Revolution heroine Josefa Ortiz de Dominguez. Gonzalez was angry at Bill Richardson of New Mexico, the American governor that has called for the destruction of this peaceful town in Mexico. And he is even angrier at the Chihuahuan governor, José Reyes Baeza, for carrying out his American friend's wishes.
We don't like to destroy. We like to build, you know, not to destroy, you know. I don't like when they destroy schools or houses, you know. It takes us too long to build a house, you know, and destroy it. You know, it takes you minutes, you know, to do it. So I don't think it's fair.
On Tuesday, Governor Richardson praised the governor of Chihuahua for the demolition of the abandoned home, saying, quote, "Bulldozing abandoned buildings in Las Chepas is a major step that sends a strong signal to anyone involved in illegal criminal activity on the border that will not be tolerated," unquote. At a press conference the same day, the governor of Chihuahua also admitted that he had decided to bulldoze the adobe homes in Las Chepas to, quote, "save New Mexico's livestock and protect New Mexican citizens from illegal immigration," unquote. Residents like Socorro Ruiz, who has lived in Las Chepas for a couple of decades now, denies that there is any criminal activity of any sort in the town. She admits that border crossers do stop by before they cross into the U.S., but only to buy food and water for their journey. Her house is only a quarter mile away from the border, and although it looks easy to get across, she has no desire to do so. She prefers to stay in Las Chepas.
It's been a lot of hard work to obtain the few possessions we have. When we first came here, we didn't have anything. We were worse off than beggars. We have a large family, and we are used to rustic work, so we built these adobe houses to live in. Now, we're not going to let them tear down our work, and if they do, they better give us something.
On Tuesday, many Las Chepas residents opposed the demolition of their homes and called the actions illegal, since police did not issue them with any warrants. According to eyewitnesses, police pointed rifles at these residents as their houses were being bulldozed. Dolores Bernal, Free Speech Radio News, New Mexico.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Monica Lopez.